This is BBC Radio 4. We now join the BBC's political editor, David Holmes, for the historic first live transmission to the nation of the proceedings of the House of Commons.
This is David Holmes in the chamber of the House of Commons, waiting for an afternoon of what could be absorbing political interest, waiting for that to begin. Question time with Mr. Tony Benn and his Department of Industry team in just under 10 minutes from now. Then at 3:20, the Attorney General, Mr. Sam Silkin, will be answering. And then about 3:30, the Prime Minister will report on the referendum outcome and its consequences, with the House questioning him fairly closely after that. Although just before the Prime Minister, we learned that we'll be hearing Mr. Mully, the Transport Minister, answering a private notice question from the MP for Nuneaton about the Nuneaton train crash. So it's a special day for us broadcasters in Parliament, and perhaps MPs feel that too. But this chamber is its usual, simple, cool-seeming self, even on this sweltering day, although it's anything but cool in this commentary box. The chamber's beginning to fill up at the moment. It is rather empty, though, just a dozen or so MPs waiting for prayers to begin on the 5 rows of green leather benches that run down either side of this chamber. A smaller chamber than you might think from the pictures, intimate and friendly, encouraging the informal style of speaking, which is one of the marks of Westminster. And other marks you'll notice if you've never experienced Westminster before. For instance, no names of MPs are used except by the Speaker, only the Honourable Gentleman or the Honourable Lady for such and such a constituency, or Right Honourable Gentleman if the MP is a Privy Councillor. And other small formalities and courtesies left over from earlier parliamentary days, but which stop the place from getting to the extremes of incivility when passions rise, as, who knows, they may this afternoon. Now, like much in Commons proceedings, the process of question time starts without fuss or warning. The Speaker simply calls the first MP. He doesn't ask his question, he simply states its number. And at that point, I shall try to slip in the nub of the question in as few words as possible before the Minister answers. Now, that answer is usually factual and brief, a response to the exact terms of the question asked, and no more. It gives away as little as possible. And this is where the element of contest in question time begins. The MP knows the Speaker will allow him one further question, and he's undoubtedly got one up his sleeve. Now, the ideal supplementary gets in under the Minister's guard, persuading him to reveal some fact or make some comment on his policy he didn't mean to make. Well, that's not an easy thing to do against ministers who know their stuff, and we've got one of the prime performers in Mr. Benn at question time today. And ministers can see most attacks coming a mile off and are well prepared for them. But if the Speaker allows more than one supplementary question, other MPs, including almost certainly the opposition shadow ministers, as we'll hear, will try and join in and drive the attack home. Although the Speaker will, of course, call supplementary questioners from the government backbenches too, and they're likely, but not always, to be helpful to the Minister. Well, I'm not suggesting a man of Mr. Benn's skills will need such help, but I expect we will see interesting exchanges developing quite quickly today over such questions as whether the government is postponing its intention to nationalise the shipbuilding and aerospace industry, the British Leyland takeover, the row with Sir Monty Finiston over steel jobs, the way Mr. Benn's Industry Act is going to work, and most relevant today, perhaps, Mr. Benn's position about cooperation as a departmental minister, if that's where he's going to stay, with the European community. Well, I believe the Speaker's procession is about to enter the chamber. Prayers are about to start, and I must leave till they're over in about 5 minutes. Meanwhile, we turn to the Leader of the Commons, Mr. Edward Short, who's been talking to me about the problems of question time as they confront the Minister at the box. How much of an ordeal is it?
Well, I think it's quite an ordeal. Prime Minister's questions, I find a dreadful ordeal. I do them when the Prime Minister's away. At the beginning of question time, of course, the House is fairly empty, but towards 3:30 it gets filled up, and, to face all that lot and not to know what supplementary questions are going to be asked and to try to estimate which members are going to ask what question is a bit of an ordeal.
So what are the first lessons that a minister wanting to succeed at this technique, and it is a very important part of the reputation he builds up, what are the lessons he's got to learn?
I think the most important lesson is to master the subject. You know, whatever, even a relatively simple question can be a cloak for the most complicated and difficult supplementary question. So he's got to spend a lot of time not just doing the answer to the question on the order paper, that's simple, but trying to estimate what other questions are likely to be asked. And so, this means, of course, knowing members of Parliament as well, knowing their interests and knowing the sort of thing they're likely to ask. because there's nothing barred in the supplementary questions.
I remember you were one of the first ministers I ever saw answering his supplementaries without his notes there.
Yes, I've always done this. I think my technique is different from a good many other ministers here, but I feel much happier if I don't have notes for the supplementary questions. But I learn it before, of course. So most ministers have a very large number of supplementary question answers, and they try to pick one, the most appropriate one for the supplementary question. Well, it may fit or it may not. I think it's much better to spend a lot of time really learning the subject.
And if you could think back to when you were a new minister first at the dispatch box, what was the sort of first trap you fell into?
The big difficulty, of course, is not really doing your homework on the interest, particularly of the member who asks the original question, because he may want to ask something quite different, which is not in order, of course, but he puts it as a supplementary question. So knowing the members of Parliament, of course, I'd been chief whip, so I did know all the members, knew their interests and the sort of things they were likely to ask.
Question time, of course, goes by at a considerable rate, and members, unless they're very quick off the mark, don't always have time to follow up in supplementaries their own original question. And a well-briefed minister really should be a total match for the average private member, shouldn't he?
Oh, yes, and I think when a minister's been in his office, in his ministerial post for some time, of course, he becomes very skillful at this and he knows the facts very well, but it's the minister who's just gone to a new department who very often has difficulties. And the minister, as I said before, who doesn't take the trouble to learn about the members of the House and the sort of things they are interested in, likely to ask.
Is it a satisfactory institution? Is it in the right state at the moment where ministers can get away, if they're clever enough, with almost anything?
Well, it's very difficult. It's not an easy House of Commons, the present one. I've been here almost 25 years, and it's the noisiest House of Commons I've known. I think this reflects society outside, and there's a good deal of heckling goes on. And it is difficult for a minister to get away with it unless he gives a reasonable answer, unless he knows his stuff.
Of course, oral question time is a matter for argument, is it not? I mean, members who simply want information tend to put down written or questions for written answer, whereas the oral question time can develop, if it's allowed to by the speaker, into a very argumentative session.
Oh, yes, and indeed it does so. The Prime Minister's questions do this every Tuesday and Thursday, of course, but I think members put down questions from various motives, some genuinely trying to find information. Others want to ventilate some matter, for example, where the liberty of the subject, of the individual, is the issue. And others simply to score debating points against the other side of the House. Mm. So there are various motives for putting down questions. But nevertheless, I think it's perhaps one of the most useful and valuable parts of our parliamentary institution.
And it is claimed, of course, that it has a considerable effect in keeping departments on their toes, both the ministers and the civil servants.
Oh, I think it does this, and it's remarkable, the dossiers the departments build up on members of Parliament, on their interests, on the sort of things they're, you know, take an interest in and ask questions about. And whenever a department is going to do something, some executive act, it always says to itself, now, what will Mr. So-and-so say about this in the House next week? So they're very, very sensitive indeed to the reactions of members at question time. So all round, from many points of view, I think it's one of the most valuable parts of our Parliament.
One of the things which does strike outsiders is the inwardness, if I could put it that way, of Commons procedures. The Commons doesn't recognise the presence of strangers, doesn't admit it's being overheard or reported in any way. That gives it this inwardness, which is perhaps makes it rather impenetrable for people coming to it for the first time, and perhaps this afternoon's radio audience.
I think that's rather the appearance more than the substance. There's a myth about this kept up, and we still refer to our people, non-members, as strangers, of course. But, you know, in the gallery, sitting in the same chamber, there are, I suppose, a few hundred people in the public gallery, only, of course, above the members. They're not separated by any glass partition or anything. There are a few dozen pressmen at the other end and a number of officials around the place, so that there are strangers there. So I think this is the old attitude which is kept up, but it's got very little substance in it now. The very fact that we agreed to start broadcasting the proceedings of the House, I think, is evidence that that old attitude is breaking down now.
Order. Order. Mr. Petty.
First question starting now.
Mr. Speaker, we intend to do our utmost to see that the Shipbuilding and Aircraft Industries Bill is made law in the present session. As I explained to the House on the 17th of March, it would not be appropriate to estimate the costs at this stage because of the large number of unquoted securities to be acquired.
Mr. Petty?
Conservative member.
Secretary of State not agree that although he has, as usual, neglected to answer the question as far as the costs are concerned, that it is quite obvious that the British aircraft industry has not failed this nation, and that therefore he should drop the disruptive proposals for nationalisation, and better still, in view of the decisive rejection by the British people last week of one of his other crackpot proposals, should he not resign?
Mr. Ben back to his feet again.
Well, I don't think I need explain to the House the government's commitment to the implementation of its election programme, which it put before the people twice last year and upon which it was elected. And if the honourable gentleman really thinks that what happened last week...